everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. Another big week of national championships for the boys, which is really the first thing on our agenda. But of course, as we start every episode with, is the question. I had my question last week about the Euros, which is nearly into its knockout stages as of Monday night. But you are going to, of course, change it back to footy. So what's the question this week?
This week, I'm looking at the AFL and the return, or certainly the return to prominence of the tagger. We've seen it in the last couple of weeks. I think Will Phillips has been a big beneficiary of that. He's performed a couple of really important roles for the North Melbourne Kangaroos. Obviously had a couple of really strong performances despite their losses. But I want to ask you, Nathan, obviously the Talent League is a really offensive league and the idea is to promote players' weapons. Would you be for or against the introduction of taggers in a league which currently prohibits such a rule?
I am against it because at this level, all you need to do is be able to show your weapons and your strengths. I think come finals time, you should, but
there is a bit more riding on results come finals time, isn't there?
So I think, look, I guess the issue with that is, well, they only play, you know, what, six games before finals. So these are like
for making
up. These are making up what they miss in the middle of the year. It's a hard one to answer because you could look at it a few different ways, but well, the other thing I think, well, if someone like Jagger Smith got tagged, would we have as much fun? Probably not.
Yeah, well, the immediate thing I think is Jagger Smith and Josh Smiley and these sorts of players, if they did have the hard tag on them, would they learn to respond to it better and be better equipped coming into AFL, coming onto a list compared to where they are at the moment? But then you also have to consider the player who is essentially sacrificing their individual game to play on them in a league that is all about individual performances. So I'd still probably lean towards the no, and I'm quite comfortable with how the league is. And obviously there are players like your Smileys and your Smiths that, although the hard tag isn't allowed, do have a clear matchup, and players are very aware of their reputations. They put a lot of time into them. But an interesting discussion nonetheless. We will get into the big talking point of this podcast though now, which is the match that occurred at Optus Stadium on Sunday between WA and Vic Metro. Vic Metro getting the job done comfortably enough in the end, but WA certainly threw a punch at them in the first half, Nathan.
Yeah, they did. I did say to you off the record, I reckon WA will knock off one of the Vic teams, and obviously now that looks like it would have to be Vic Country. My questions were, and WA, to their credit, have been very good defensively, and I thought Metro would struggle a little to find that balance because I've only played the one game compared to WA's three, and they've got a good idea of, at that point, you know, where they match up against. Yeah. They've played two before Vic Metro, but yeah, kicked. They were down by 4 points at half time and then brought it home, 8 goals to 3 in that second half, and it was class that really just lifted. It did feel like Metro at some point were going to figure it all out and click, and they did. So a big win for Metro. They go for 2 from 2, but let's roll into the top players. I want to start who got our 5 in the 5-4-3-2-1, which was Isaac Kakko.
Yep.
This was, I guess, when we had discussions of, you know, who should get 5 and why them over them. Jagger is probably the other one that people are like, how does he not get 5? Isaac Kakko doesn't play a better game than that. And not saying he doesn't have the capability. He did everything he possibly could as a small forward, as a, you know, rolling up into the midfield. He did everything so well, so effective. He's so damaging and crafty. Only the only downside of his game was he kicked one goal.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was going to say. Could he have kicked 2 or 3 or 4?
But, and then I was like, well, if he never did what he did rolling up higher up the ground, well, Metro are quite
a lot of score involvements for Isaac Kakko.
But he was electric. I mean, I thought his handballing ability as well. Had some really crafty handballs. Yeah, like to advantage when he's going the other direction, things like that. But he was terrific. I don't think he will play a better game than that. Not to say he won't reach those standards again, but that was exceptional. Just thrived. A big occasion for these boys as well on Optus. I mean, that's an AFL ground that could have possibly been, apart from the boys who played on the G last year, but big occasion for a lot. But he just lifted, big time player.
Yeah, certainly, and I don't think anyone's surprised to see it either, and the unselfishness was something else that stood out. We talk about how many he passed off with the handballing and the like. We'll stay in the forward line and we'll move line by line. Yeah. I thought the other obvious forward that had a day out was Tom Sims, and probably one who really elevated his stocks in this game more than any other player. Coming into the game, we know he had the bag of seven and I think another bag of five this year against Oakley and against Western respectively. He showed he could do it on the biggest stage with his contested marking, a couple of really big one-on-one marks, just reads the flight of the ball so well and was a barometer for his team up forward. Finished with 3 goals, 3, but it felt like a 5-goal performance in terms of his importance to the way Metro structured up inside 50.
100%. And I said this to you before, he is almost like a ruckman playing full forward because that height is almost unbeatable. His one-on-one ability, when he gets a hold of his opponent physically, he's going to get these first, first hands to it in the air. And that's what he did most of the time. And yeah, I felt like 3 goals wasn't even reflective of how dominant he was.
And the other thing that he did, you say he obviously has that ability to go into the ruck. And I thought it was what he was doing as a secondary ruck in the first quarter, which really... Yeah. Set the tone for his day, and then obviously what he was able to do up forward throughout the day was really impressive as well. The other one that was almost as good as them but wasn't quite able to convert but could easily have had a real statement day, I thought, was Jesse Dottoli. Finished with the 1 goal, 4.
Yeah.
And yeah, took some really nice marks. There was a big hanger that he took on the the pane of 50 and was really damaging. We know how many tricks he does have in terms of his different avenues to goal and that sort of thing. And I thought he did really show it, although he wasn't quite able to always finish. And he always looks dangerous with the ball in his hand because of how creative he can be going forward.
The other one I'd probably add to that didn't really come into it until the second half was Harry Armstrong. And it was one moment that, you know, if you look back in a couple months' time and you say, what's the draftable aspects of him? It was a 3-on-1 effort. Right on 50, and he just outsmarts them all.
And kicks the goal.
There was a great goal from about 45 meters out. Took about 2 steps, and it bounces through. And it was just and a few courageous moments across the ground as well. So whilst the impact wasn't massive across 4 quarters, I just thought those little moments, they make a player sometimes, and they add to your draftability. So yeah, he'd probably be the last one I'd add in that forward group, unless you've got another one.
No, I think they were the main ones. We'll touch on the WA players after we've been through each of the lines of Vic Metro, but certainly Harry Armstrong showed probably what he was able to do in that weekend of that first Vic Metro game when he was playing for Oakley, kicked the 4 goals on the Friday night. Of course, he won the game after the siren for Sandy, and then coming into the team was able to show he could do it at the next level. We'll move into the midfield now. Jagger Smith, the obvious talking point. He was everywhere, and we've come to expect it from him, but he's one that is elevating by the week, it feels like, because obviously the 50 disposal game, the 40 disposal game, really strong start to the championships. And I actually thought this game was a little bit better than his first game. I did have him as best on ground. We obviously gave him second best on ground once we did discuss it on the Instagram channel. And really, really important in terms of his ball use as well. He always hit his targets, it felt like, whether he was under pressure or he had some space to work with.
I thought the thing about his game that, you know, just as a player, it was his dare for his kicking into the middle of the ground. Yeah. He's not afraid. He just kind of has that ability. He's like, you know what, I'll take it on. That I know that I can chase that up later if it goes bad. Yeah. But his kicks are so effective where you just know that when he's got the ball in hand, he's going to use it so, so well. And there's never anything negative you write about him. I don't know about you. Yeah. I don't feel like I've written anything negative about him so far. I should also clarify, our 5-4-3-2-1 are a combination of our votes that I average out.
Yep.
And that's how you've had Jagger top, I had Kakko top, and a few others. So if you do wonder, we do have different opinions on different things, but we do average, and that's how we get to the Instagram post. Who do you want to move to next?
I'll speak about Levi Ashcroft, then you can talk about Christian Moraes. Yep. But I'll start with Levi Ashcroft. I thought he was really smart and really unselfish. He was willing to – there was a moment where he was inside 50 and time just seemed to slow down. He was able to hit up a target. I reckon it was Tom Sims. And I thought that sort of embodied the way Levi Ashcroft has played throughout the season, his ability to make decisions, his ability to make space where there wasn't any. And I thought he was one of the most influential players on the ground. I know you thought a similar thing about Christian Moraes' game.
Yeah, I did. And I thought he was always that kind of just that tier under the top on the day. But it was his work on the outside, his speed and ability to be so nifty in tight situations, kept the ball moving when he could, set up a goal, I think it was in the second half, with just a really quick handball over the top to Murphy Reid, and it was an easy finish. But it was just his game awareness to understand that Murphy Reid was right there in a scorable position when some players might think, well, let's try and snap this and get the goal myself. But I thought he did the little things well, probably went not unrewarded, it was just he didn't have as much of the ball as those top midfielders, but every time he touched it, I did think he was doing something quite valuable with it, whether it was meters gained or just really clean disposal in transition. So he was one that I had possibly is in the lower end of my votes. But yeah, I mean, the performances of some others come the end of that game just kind of lifted. But yeah, he was one that I'd have in that. Yeah, that 5 to 10 category.
Yeah, and it was a good game for that sort of thing, because I think Kakko, Sims and Smith were the clear standouts. We both had them as our top three, albeit in different orders. And then below that, you could basically throw a blanket over the next 10. There were so many that had their moments, which was really good to see. The next one we'll move to is Murphy Reid, who played another game that added to his CV in terms of that composure and that ability to release teammates by hand and release them going out the front of stoppage, which I thought was really smart in terms of his ability to weight handballs perfectly for his teammates to run onto it. You see Nick Dacos do it, and I thought Murphy Reid was able to do it at times as well. I think that was really impressive, and clearly, you know, when he gets the opportunity to use it on the outside, he's really smart.
Yeah, I like that comparison to Nick Dacos, actually. I feel the running patterns there are very similar, where they assess the game on the run, and when they got the ball in hand, that next move is always just premeditated in their head. But yeah, he was just, his vision is just terrific around the ground. Even his kicking up the line, it's so, you know, so particular, so precise, and always just gets the ball moving so quickly. Love the way he went about it. He always seems to finish in the top five. Just naturally, with the impact he has, he's I'm assuming he's one that would end up in the coach's votes pretty much every week. He executes what he needs to so well.
Having a good season, as is Josh Smiley. Probably a little bit quieter in the first couple of games of the champs, but I thought his second half was quite strong, and he showed his class. Obviously a big-bodied bull and had some really nice moments, but that probably just about rounds out the midfield side of things from Vic Metro, I would have thought. We'll move to the back line, and I was really impressed with the back line. I thought, as a whole, the back line was the most balanced line out of the three for Vic Metro. You had Harrison Oliver. I know you were really high on his game, and his pressure and efficiency was really strong. You had Adrian Cole, who hardly lost a one-on-one all day. You had Luke Traynor, who's just become that real trusty defender who can take intercept marks at ease. You had Zach Johnson, who took the game on by foot and showed a bit of dairy, showing his versatility as well. Luca Grego was one who applied really good pressure and showed his hardiness in terms of his ability to win the hard ball, but then also his dare to burst out and try to make things happen going through the corridor a couple of times. And Jaden Ewan came into the game in the second half really clean and hit the ball at pace. I thought it was a really balanced effort from the back six or seven for Vic Metro.
You've summed that up very well. What I'm going to add to what you said is, if I had to pick someone that showed a good glimpse of why they are draftable and a bit of an improvement from recent weeks, would be Adrian Cole, because the thing I've noticed with him is when it comes to forwards that have a little bit of speed, that's where he lacks a little bit to meet his opponent in a one-on-one and create those spores. He's great when it comes to body work, but it's that speed that's probably let him down. But I felt like he was always getting himself in the right spots where he wasn't finding himself too far ahead or behind the ball, and really read the ball terrifically. A few good defensive spoils, or whether that was intercept marks, I thought he just kind of improved a little bit from what we've seen at Talent League level recently, and to do it on that type of stage was quite terrific, but I'm not going to add to what you've added because you've summed it up well.
Just anything you want to say about Harrison Oliver? I know you're probably higher on his game than I was.
Let me find his name. Yeah. No, it's just his work rate. Like you see a player who is that willing to push back or forward no matter what it takes. His defensive pressure is elite, and like I will love a player if you've got terrific defensive outset, whether you're a midfielder, forward, defender. That's just a key to really slotting in any AFL environment or team. And yeah, he worked up late inside 50 as well for a really nice goal that I think wrapped up his day really well.
A banana from 30 was. But yeah, no, a good effort from the back six or seven from Vic Metro. We'll move over to the WA side of things now, and I'll let you take the lead. Fred Rodriguez was one who really impressed throughout the day. I thought every time he got the ball, it looked like something was going to happen.
Yeah, probably unlucky not to get a mention in the last game. He sparked a little bit in the second half against SA and had some really nice moments. But he's a good size, provides really good run on the outside of the contest, has really good vision with his kicking, was able to switch it a couple of times, clean hands out of traffic. A pretty neat and well-balanced midfielder for WA. Loved his ability to just keep it moving up the line with his kicking. Thought he didn't really put a foot wrong and just put it together a really consistent four-quarter performance against Metro, whereas he's had those kind of glimpses in previous games. So it was a really well-rounded performance.
You talk about a consistent four-quarter performance. I thought Jackson Artemis did that really well and just executed his role really well. I know you talk about the way Murphy Reid is able to do that consistently for Vic Metro. I thought that was something which really stood out for him. He was prominent and involved in a lot of what WA were doing when it was going right for them and was a key pillar for them as well when it was probably going against them. He did remain in and around the contest and was quite prominent as well, but particularly his first half I noticed. So that was really good to see. Luke Urquhart was the leading disposal getter on the ground, and his ability to just get himself into ball winning positions I really liked. He's clearly really smart. His running patterns lend themselves really well to the way the game was played. He just let himself down with some finishing polish.
Yeah, he did, and we got a question on our 5-4-3-2-1. He didn't make it in, and it was just that disposal efficiency. It really lets him down. He turns it over quite a lot, which is it's such an obvious fix, though, which I think is the good thing because otherwise his ability, his contest work is so strong, and like you said, he gets himself into positions where he can easily win the footy. So it was just, and it's been a trend for him. It's his disposal efficiency that has let him down. It's that last kick inside 50 that he'll shank it and it leads to turnovers. So if he's able to fix that up, tidy that up a little bit, does his chances the world of good because, he's quite ready built for a senior environment if he was to get there.
Malachi Champion probably has some question marks about whether he's senior built just because he is 172 centimetres, but he did his chances no harm at all with a 3-goal performance. He started like a house on fire, and every time the ball was in his hands, it felt like he was going to kick a goal or set one up.
He's got the same, X factor as a Nick Watson or Isaac Kakko. It's just probably his impact is felt less in the middle of the ground compared to someone like a Kakko. You feel like he'll have terrific moments. He kicks 3 goals, but what's he do outside of those 3 goals? It's limited compared to, other small forwards in the crop.
Right, yeah.
But he has got the same X factor. Like I said, I think what you noted, we both noted that his work rate I think it was his second goal, pushes up all the way from D50, inside forward 50. I mean, he does the little things
quite
well.
Do that more consistently.
Well. Yeah, but he does it well at the same time. And 3 really nice goals, kicked a really good dribble goal to start the game and a comfortable 3rd goal from a set shot. So he impacts on the scoreboard. That's undeniable. It's just that next step of, how does he impact further up the ground and use himself as a utility in transition, which I think will build and hopefully he's able to show a bit more of that against Vic Country.
Bo Allen and Hugh Boxall quickly, how'd you see their games? I thought Hugh Boxall in particular was one that was really important for WA.
Yeah, Boxer was pretty good. Really good contested work in the end. Took a few good pack marks and worked really well around the ground as an outlet in transition for WA. And his vision moving up the ground, he hit up Champion really well in the second half. So he's been another one of WA's pretty consistent performers across the championships. And Bo Allen, I thought he was a bit sloppy to start. He didn't really seem to get into the game as well as he probably would have liked, but it was his strength out of the contest. It's his natural toughness to shrug off defenders, kicked a really nice goal. He ended up with 2 in the end, but it's his general work rate. I feel like he did, where he lacked in a bit of cleanliness with disposal, made up for it in his work rate around the contest in the end. And yeah, it was an okay game for him, but he's definitely can reach another level quite easily.
Yeah, and obviously we know that with the fact he's part of the AFL Academy, so really highly regarded player. We'll move on to just some questions, and we'll just have a bit of a general discussion around the two Vic teams. Obviously Metro halfway through their championships, Country have still got three games to go. So I'll start by asking you, Nathan, halfway through the championships, who do you think deserves a go through the Metro midfield? It was a massive talking point coming into the championships with how heavy they went in terms of midfielders. So some of the players who do play as a midfielder predominantly at their talent league club were going to be pushed out to a wing or a half back or a half forward. So who deserves a go through there that hasn't so far gone through there? I'll start with the obvious one. Cody Anderson hasn't got a game at all so far. I'd like to see him come in and get the opportunity to play midfield. That's clearly his best position. And I think we need to see him do it against the best. We've seen him do it at VFL level and we've seen him do it for Eastern. Give him a couple of games because I think he can be really important both ways in the Metro midfield.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I said he's most likely he's coming in for two good games.
Yeah,
that's the only good thing, and you reckon he slots right in? Surely they've waited out this period for him to come right into that midfield. Yep. My player is Jesse Dottoli. I'd like to see him have a really solid run through the midfield, just because of how crafty he is. That I think he adds another dimension in the midfield compared to your typical ball winners that just get it out and run. He's able to size up his options really well, and he's. I feel like his offensive ability that he provides inside 50 is another dimension when you move that into the center. So he's someone that I'd like to see just have a half at least, just run through there. I mean, even that could be a quarter, but I think you'll see a little more versatility from Dottoli, and he had his moments like we said, but I think he will have a game where he's just able to really show every bit of his skill set.
Yeah. Certainly. And I think another one that I'd like to see go through there is Damon Hollow. He obviously started really well on the wing, or played really well on the wing in the first game, and has that electric speed. And I think he could offer that point of difference. So be good to see him go through there. And Zach Johnson, really important off in the back line, is another one that has a versatility. There's so many others as well. Josh Dolan, obviously, as well. But conversely, Nathan, has responded well to the required positional versatility in this Metro outfit. Who's been pushed to a different position that you thought, geez, I didn't know he had that?
Well, it was weird because I feel like Metro have done pretty well to give most a run. I mean, Reshko's been pushed to the outside, but he's used to it and he's adapted quite well. I'm going to take it to a Country perspective in this one. And from the first game, I would say Xavier Ivicic in that middle has been, well, he was terrific in that first game.
Yep.
Very crafty, especially for his size. I feel like he took on a role that was effective for the team, but just for his skill set as well. I'm sure you're going to Metro answer, but that would be mine. Metro, I feel like it's most have had their opportunity at their normal level so far. And it's still early days as well.
I'd love to give a shout out to Damon Hollow because of the work he was able to do on the wing in the first game, and obviously sat out the second game, but we'll see where he plays in the last two games. And Zach Johnson, I've thought, has shown a little bit. He's obviously shown what he can do at Northern, and I want to include that in this as well. He's obviously played some games at Northern in the back line to prepare for it, and he's shown he can do it. So he's shown he's got that versatility, and then brought that into the champs as well. So there've been a couple, but certainly Damon Hollow in particular. From a Country perspective, they've brought Alex Tarrou into their squad for the rest of the championships. He's an aggressive marking defender from Gippsland and has played three really good games now for them, averaging 9 marks in his last three games, and takes a few contested marks as well. Just reads the ball so well and attacks it so hard. But I want to ask you, who would be your key backs for Vic Country? I suppose Matt Whitlock would appear the lock of the key defenders. But outside of that, what other tall timber are you playing?
Well, Barrett's the one that you sit as a 50-50, right? I mean, we'll talk about him later in the talent league review. We watched Bendigo's game on the weekend.
And he's playing in defence at talent league level.
Yes, yes. It's interesting because the next game is against WA, who have tall timber as Max Raw and Guerin as well, who had quite games. Is he just that couple centimeters too short? I wonder. The others,
I think he plays taller than 194.
Yeah, so he does. I mean, he's got that athletic capability that you see in the forward line. Connor Evans is the other name that comes up in that conversation, but I feel like you kind of waste him playing as him as a key defender where he needs plays to be that intercept third role. Tall. Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then you spoke about Tyrou as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, your opinion on it.
Yeah, I'd have Matt Whitlock down back, clearly. And then I would have Mitch Lloyd again. I think and he obviously played the last match as well. And I think his ability to, lock down has been seen. He's really strong, pound for pound, hard to beat one-on-one. And then the third tall coming in, and I really like Connor Evans, but I'd love to see Alexander Tyrou get a go because he can also bail out and he's also strong one-on-one as well. So I think you're really well covered there in terms of some intercept markers because Lloyd can take some intercept marks as well and also your one-on-one ability. So I think that would make it a bit more balanced. But even if you brought Evans in instead of Tyrou, I think that just gives you a much better balanced back line where I think Country were considerably undersized in the last game, despite your Charlsons and your Lockie Jakes and these sort of players, Toby Trevally, are all fighting really hard, particularly at ground level and being really competitive. They just couldn't quite match it in the air at times. And against a tall side like WA, you do just need to add a little bit more height, which I think they understand with the addition of Alexander Tyrou to the squad. Now, the starting mids is the next question I'll ask you for Vic Country. Who do you want to see go through the midfield? There were some interesting names that went through there in the first game.
Harry Charlson's one that I'd like to see have a go through the midfield. I guess he probably just sits under that upper echelon of midfielders at the moment. His natural position is off half back, but he's been playing in the center for the Rebels, so it's just interesting to see whether he can take that leap up and match the level of intensity in the midfield. He's a clean ball mover, like he knows how to get it moving quite quickly. His stoppage craft holds up pretty well. So, he's one I'd be quite interested to see as a starting midfielder and out of pure interest for next year. I'd love to see Willem Dersma really injected into that midfield group and see. I mean, you can experiment and try what you want with the bottom ages at this point. So it'd just be an interesting one to see how he adapts at that level already, because I'm sure with a player with that talent, he'd probably take it on pretty well.
Nothing against a player of his talent who is in the conversation to go number one next year, but I think with a few players there, I just wouldn't want to see him take up the spot of a top ager.
Yeah.
That would be my argument. I'd be vehemently against a bottom ager getting an opportunity in the midfield unless you were really struggling for midfielders, which Vic Country aren't. I would go Xavier Iversich again because of how strong he was in the first game, that speedy element that he adds. Harvey Langford, again, had a strong first game. Hard to remove him after that, an AFL Academy member. I'd like to see Cooper Hines get a go through there as a big-bodied mid. He's obviously really strong, and he's shown that he can do everything at talent league level, so let him prove that he can do it at champs level. And him and Sammy Lawler swapping as a forward mid, both of them when they're in there are that big-bodied mid, and when they're up forward, they're hard to beat one-on-one. And Archer Day-Wicks is one that I'd like to see get a go through there. He got a go through there in the first game, and he's probably one that does need to elevate, and I think he has every opportunity to elevate because he's now got some continuity behind him in terms of games. Played a couple of nice games at Bendigo, so he's got the opportunity to hit these next 3 weeks with a hurry and hopefully take some people by surprise after a solid but not absolutely spectacular start to the season. But from your perspective, who has the opportunity to elevate?
Well, I've got two non-Vic Country. I've got a Metro and Allies. Lenny Douglas has to elevate for the Allies because, he's got one more opportunity to. He doesn't want to fall into a case of someone like a Joe Pike from last year who has all the attributes to prove they can match it, you know, at the top level, and he's done so well for Tassie to start the year, but he just hasn't been able to translate that form into Allies. And then for Metro, it's Tom Gross for me. He's had good moments, but it's that snap from 50 that happens too often, and he needs to be able to size up his options a lot better. I feel like he nails a kick inside 50. That does so much more than having shots at goal that don't impact in the end. There's just been too many moments throughout the year that I think are slowly hurting his chances as the year goes along, because a player like him, he does have the talent. We know that.
X factor.
He's a courageous player out there. It's his decision making needs to have a bit more polish on it, especially in these last two champs games, especially in that country game where that's all eyes on you. SA, you can get away with it a little bit more. Their kicking's not as good. So he's probably the other one for me that I think those two have the potential to really show they're capable, but just need to put it together a little better.
Yep. Nah, very well summed up. We'll move to our Boys Talent League review now, and we'll start with Bendigo, or Dandenong versus Bendigo at Shepley Oval, 14-12-96 to 14-11-95. Dandenong getting up in a massive win for the Stingrays. Yeah. They were weakened by the absences of Harvey Langford and Cooper Hines, both rested ahead of three consecutive games. You'd hope from their perspective for Vic Country if they do manage to play all three of them. And Bendigo had their full team in bar Toby Trevaglia, who was rested. So everyone else was playing for them. So a disappointing loss for the Pioneers on the road. But Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves was the hero, kicking a goal with 2.5 minutes to go to effectively seal the result. Henry Hayes then kicked it behind, extended the margin to 7. The Pios were able to transition it. Hunter Wright kicked a goal with just over a minute on the clock, but Bendigo only had about 15 seconds at the restart to try and get the perfect play forward, and Dandenong were able to hold them up. A thrilling finish. Bendigo were never quite able to get the lead in the last quarter, but boy, did they come with a rush. And yeah, it was a really thrilling game to watch in that second half in particular. I'll start with a few names that impressed me, then I'll throw it over to you. But to me, Job Shanahan was the real standout. Kicked 5 goals, 2, and took some really big marks inside 50, kept his team in it, particularly in that second half. Charlie Orchard, I've talked a lot about his form. It wasn't so much his marking on the day. He only took 2 marks, but was really poised in the back line from a Dandenong perspective. Lockie Hogan's ball use was as good as it usually is. Tom Evans, coming back from school-level footy, was really strong. His work rate was really good across the ground, found plenty of the footy, and was one who has the opportunity to potentially push into Vic Country. I know that there are some hopes there, but yeah, he certainly did his chances no harm. Archie Watt and Connor Evans as well did some nice things, as did Ollie Morris. And then from a race perspective, I thought Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves obviously had that moment at the end, but he was probably the best across the course of the day. Charlie Rowe did some really nice things in the midfield, really hard worker, and Tyson Anik as well.
You always give this comprehensive review, and then I'm meant to back that up with and not repeat myself. I'll do my best. Should preface, the way our days work, I saw the first half, you saw the second half. So it's a bit different here. But yeah, Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves was the clear one for Dandenong for me. His poise is terrific. Just understands the flow of the game so well. Where to move the footy, that, you know, the ability to size up whether they go wide or go through the corridor. And his composure has been terrific in the last couple of games. And his tackle pressure is really good as
underrated,
well.
Underrated?
Yeah, just his second efforts around the ground. I thought Riak Andrew started well against Job Shanahan, and clearly Job just got the better of him in the end. But his composure out of D50 was actually quite good. And it was when he kind of got a bit of space off Shanahan, he was able to use it quite well. And he did actually compete pretty well one-on-one, but you know, when Job gets going, it's game over. So he got unlucky in that sense. And Jordan Doherty is again really nifty around the center stoppages, kicked a really nice goal in the first quarter, and a good goal line mark as well, inside 50. Just sat himself, shouldn't go for that far back, but he went that far back to take that mark, and yeah, sort of a really nice goal as well. From a Bendigo perspective, it was Job. I thought Archer
Daywicks.
Yeah, Archer Daywicks. He was okay. He's still got another level to take it to. Yep. He's probably the other one that you'd add to that needs to elevate in the back half of this champs, because you see he's got it. He's clearly a player that's playing with a little bit of pressure at the moment in his performances. Turned it over a little, but he was his strength inside 50 that I noticed as well. He provided a really good intercept presence in the middle of the ground and good kicking to advantage inside 50 as well. So some good things with some things to improve on. I think it will come together at some point. Yeah, Tommy Evans, like you said as well, Lockie Hogan really clean and didn't really put a foot wrong. So,
and James Barrett finished with the 10 marks down back. So yeah, it's a second consecutive week. He's looked really comfortable aerially down back. So starting to grow into that role and show a little bit of positional versatility. And that was the only game on the Saturday. On the Sunday, Gippsland were soundly beaten at Shepley Oval, 17-52 to Geelong, 18-9, 17. 17. Geelong really kicking away in an 8-goal last quarter. From a Gippy perspective, Alexander Tarou, who was just added to the Vic Country squad, really justified why he was added with another marking masterclass down back. And Jai Esler seems to be growing in confidence as well. He finished with 7 marks and some really strong grabs among those. For Geelong, it was Oliver Johnston who was the story, probably with 4 goals, a bottom ager who played his second game of Talent League footy. In his first game of Talent League footy, he finished with the 2 goals, but he's a really nice size as well, so good to see him go well. And Eden Ibbotson, who trialled for Vic Country, was, as usual, a really courageous, hard performance in the midfield from him, and Josh Lindsay as well. And then the other game on the Sunday was a much closer one between Murray and GWV, with Murray going down 9-7-61 to GWV 11-5-71. Sammy Lawler building into some strong form, 34 touches and 5 tackles. Jonty Fall continues to build. He finished with 3 goals. Ollie Warburton, the 30 disposals. The ruck battle was intriguing. Flynn Penry up against Zach Harding and Indy Kotzer, who double-teamed him really well throughout the day. Josh Murphy, the clear storyline, with 6 goals. So he's going to be an absolute nightmare to watch, and one that's going to be a lot of fun in the next 3 games of, or next game of championships footy for the Allies. And Max Marnie continued his strong form for the Bushies as well.
Well, should I just say, with Sam Law, talk about a difference maker. That literally is he's a game winner. That Rebels have what? They've lost however many of the last couple, and he comes in and he wins it for them. I'll quickly run through the ladder and we'll give our tips for the boys, but Falcons now lead 28 equal with Tassie on 28. Sandy Calder Gippy on 24. Dandy 22 with that draw. Murray and Eastern on 20. Western Northern Bendigo on 16. Rebels on 8. Oakley on 4. And for the tips next week, not a lot going on, and especially with both Country and Metro playing only 3 games this week. Western and Oakley.
I'd say Western will be too strong.
Western as well. Calder and Northern.
I would back Northern.
Yeah, split Calder. And then Eastern Sandy.
Yeah, Eastern will be a bit too deep.
I'll split again. I'll go Sandy. So
I always tip Eastern when Eastern go against Sandy. Happened in the grand final last year. It happened earlier, still my premiership
favourites, but yeah, I mean, these are pretty gutted teams for this week. We'll move now to the girls, which, as expected, pretty one-sided results across the board. And I guess I'll get it started off with Eastern, who ran home comfortable winners 91-16. And Sierra Greaves for Western continues to be their shining light with 35 touches and a goal. Stacia Stevenson, 28 touches. She's putting together a really, really good year of footy, and excited to see her take it to the next level, assuming she's in the champ squad. Unfortunately, we don't have the list at the time of recording, and they will come out before the champs on the weekend. But we're going to assume she's in that squad in the form she's been in. She's been absolutely terrific. Grace Bellany with 25 touches as well. Zoe Vozzo's been consistently good for Easton with 2 goals, and Georgie Brisbane joined her as well with 2 goals as well.
Yeah, no, Zoe Vosso catching plenty of people's eyes. Calder played against Oakley, and Oakley far too strong, 14-13-97 against Calder, 2-2-14, kicked a couple of goals in the last quarter. From an Oakley perspective, Bailey Martin had that breakout performance that the Chargers have been expecting from her, finished with the 4 goals and showed her class as a double bottom major. Sarah Pousty, Chloe Bowne, and Emma McDonald flexed their muscle against a Calder outfit that was gutted by the absences of Chloe Baker-West, Jade McClay, and Ali Spegan getting an opportunity at VFLW level, so an excellent opportunity for her to show what she could do. But Eden Grant went very well in terms of her ability to neutralize the ruck contest. Her hitouts and clearances were really impressive. Lara Churchill's second half was really energetic, and Maddie Albrecht added dynamism and strength as well in a tough loss for the Cannons.
Northern got the job done, 12-12-84 to 3-2-20. So Sandy's woes continue, and Northern kept them goalless after half time. So really big effort from them. Kira Lemire, again, 3 goals. She backs up her 3-goal effort against Oakley the week before, which is really impressive. Sophie Mackay led it for the Dragons with 30 touches and 2 goals. And Scout Howden as well, 27 touches. Excited to see the back end of her season as well, and really hope she got the spot in a Metro team as well. She's really deserved it. So, yes, do hope she did get him.
Gippy went down to Tassie but took it up to them all match, really, and they had a chance to run over them in the last quarter, but unfortunately kicked five behinds when they were down by about 18 points. So they ended up going down 3-10-28 to 7-4-46. From a Tassie perspective, Misha Barwin showed a lot of energy and played with a lot of pizzazz in the forward line. Priya Bowring, Lucy Thompson and Meg Harrison all strong. For Gippy, Grace Dillo, the double bottom major, was best on ground, showing her silky skills and calmness in traffic. Ash Perkins and Bonnie Williams were really exciting off half back. Ash Central was closed down quite well by Tassie. That put some attention into her, and she finished with 13 disposals, which is less than she's accustomed to.
I thought you were about to say 30 disposals, and I was going to say, yeah, that's probably still a good effort. Geelong got the job done, 7-9-51 against Murray's 4-2-26. Yeah, Murray continued to be very competitive, and a winnable game this week we'll touch on in our tips. But yeah, Sophia Green, Ali Hall, Nikita Spiteri, the three main for Murray. Their tackle pressure is terrific. I mean, Sophia, Ali, 11 tackles and Nikita with 10. So their pressure around the contest is terrific. Sarah Howley finished with 33 touches, 6 tackles, 2 behinds. So nearly converted on the scoreboard. Lucy Marishuk as well finished with the 25. So the Falcons keep ticking over pretty well.
Yeah, nah, certainly. And good to see Murray competitive as well. Dandenong against Bendigo, the first part of this doubleheader at Shepley on Saturday. Dandenong too strong, 10-15-75 to Bendigo 2-6-18. Evelyn Connolly kicked the 4 goals, and it was a real breakout performance from her. Georgia Templeton in a new role, she kicked 2 goals and had 14 hitouts. So good to see her adapt really well. Kate Terry continued her strong form in the midfield. And then for Bendigo, the standouts were Lou Painter and Lexi Gregor, was also quite exciting.
Tips this week, actually, before
probably
that,
don't need to do tips.
We well, there's only there's week. Two games. There's only two. I'll do tips and quickly run through the ladder. But Murray and Rebels?
I'll go Murray in a little bit of an upset. I really hope they get their first win of the season.
Yeah, they certainly could. And yeah, I'll just split for the sake of it, and Eastern and Geelong, which, if it wasn't for Metro playing this week, would be quite a good battle.
I would go Geelong, just given Eastern's absences with the Vic Metro game.
I'll still go Eastern. I think their depth is quite ridiculous.
Yeah, it is, certainly is.
Oakley still lead on in first. Eastern and Tassie on 28. Dandy 24. Gippy, Northern and Geelong on 20. Bendigo, Rebels, Sandy on 12. Western on 8. Calder with 1 win and Murray hopefully going to get their first win this week. We should say we're not going to be able to watch any Talent League next week because of the AFL scheduling, where the champs are directly on top of them. Which
That's
is frustrating.
Boys and girls.
Yeah,
national
champs, which is very frustrating, but not many games. We'll still review.
And hard for the AFL to
well,
do
no,
about
I know
it,
that's,
yeah.
But it is frustrating as there's only two of us. So we unfortunately can't watch. This is one of the rare weeks where we won't be able to catch any. But before we end, the Allies girls squad was announced during the week, and let me quickly bring up that article again. But a lot of Tassie girls got the mention in there, and which is terrific to see. I'll run through the names quickly right now. Misha Barwin, Sophie Strom, Priya Bowring, Lucy Thompson, Mackenzie Williams, Harriet Binley, Ava Reid, all featuring, which is terrific. You can't really question any of those inclusions. Who are you excited the most to see in that Allies squad?
Probably Ava Reid. I want to see what she's able to do at the next level. I'm really excited to see the likes of Lucy Thompson and Mackenzie Williams. Yep. I think we know that they deserve to be there, though. And Ava Reid is one who has played some really strong footy in the first month or so of the season, and we saw it last year as well. She adds a lot of energy, and her pressure is really good as well. So it's really good to see her get that opportunity, and hopefully she can have the scoreboard impact that she does for the Devils.
That was going to be my answer as well, but I guess Sophie Strong's the one there. I'd love to see her rip it apart at that level. Allies and Vic Metro kick off the girls' championships this Saturday, 11 o'clock. That's at Blacktown. We will, of course, review that game. Vic Country get off and running the next week against Queensland, which is an absolute task for the first game, especially up in Queensland as well. We did want to preview a little bit of the girls, but yeah, like we said, with the girls' squads not out, it makes it a little harder, and we don't want to assume just in case, but we will give comprehensive reviews of
And of just also worth touching on, Tamika Rourke from the Murray Bush Rangers, and Ali Hall as well, who both playing in the talent league and both playing some strong footy.
My bad, apologies there. But that wraps it up for this week. Next week is, it's a big champs week on the podcast, where Vic Metro are playing SA on the Sunday, Vic Country play WA on the Saturday, and also Vic Metro playing Allies in the girls on the Saturday. So we will go through all three of those championships games in a bit of detail and, start to kind of deconstruct everyone's performances a little bit more. But thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for more. Go back to last week to see our statement makers and who made it for the boys, and the girls will be in a couple of weeks when the champs well and truly get underway. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you next week.